You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade. Welcome to From Embers. This week I'm going to play you some audio from a panel I was a part of a while ago at the Montreal Anarchist Book Fair. I am on the tape introducing myself, so I won't give you all too much preamble here. That would just be redundant. I had a ton of fun on this panel though, and I was super happy to hang out with all three of the other show hosts on it. I hope you all also get something out of this fairly meta show about shows. Here we go.
All right, so welcome everybody. It's the first ever podcast panel at the 20th anniversary of the Montreal Anarchist Book Fair. My name's Muggs. I'm a part of the organizing collective for the book fair, and I've been doing that for a few years. And so thanks for joining us. And of course, if you've noticed, it's a book fair, but the book is in the title, but we've always had different media take part in the event. We've had recording rooms, things like that in the past. But this is the first time we've had any podcast-specific content and panels. So thanks for coming to the very first one. We decided to do that this year because, of course, there's a huge increase in popularity and the variety of podcasts of the anarchist nature made by anarchists, for anarchists, peripherally interesting to anarchists. And they're a huge source of information, introduction to anarchist ideas, and also a really good way for people to feel connected. Maybe they don't feel connected, maybe it's a bit alienating. That's something that we're going to try and get through a little bit today. And so we're going to talk about anarchist culture, struggle, how audio media fits into that, and what goes into getting the message out there. And so I'll let everyone on the panel introduce themselves, starting with Anais.
Hey, I'm Anais. I use they, them pronouns. And my podcast is called Ain't Nothing So Now. I don't know if we're going to talk about like content and stuff a little bit later. I assume we will, so maybe I'll leave it at that, and we'll like get into the conversation of what our podcasts are a bit.
If you want to just say maybe what the general content is.
So Ain't Nothing So Now is an intersectional feminist podcast in French. We cover all sorts of topics related to that.
My name is Tim Soul. I use he, his, and I'm the host of Soulcast, and it's a podcast just about, it's kind of just a nerdy philosophy podcast. I also do a lot of stuff on like permaculture, and I'm primarily a musician, so it's focusing a lot on the intersection between art and radical politics, and so that's basically what my podcast is about.
My name is Aaron. I also use he and him pronouns. And I'm producing a podcast called Changing on the Fly, which looks at links between hockey and radical politics. And prior to that, I was producing one called The Rebel Beat, which looked at the relationship between music and social movements, trying to look at like a variety of different genres and a variety of different continents and how music is used in radical and transformative social movements. But I would just say maybe like prior to that, I worked in community radio for a long time. And maybe one of the things I'll talk about later is like, I'm so happy that this panel is happening because it's like, it's really cool how you said, like the book fair, and here we are talking about podcasts. And for me, it's been more of like a media fair throughout the years. And I think podcasting is like a really great medium for anarchists and for radicals to be propagating our ideas. But prior to that, I mean, most of my history is in community radio, which also like was that for decades. And so maybe like we can explore that a little bit, like the transition, because I think there's important links, but also like really important differences between radio and podcasting.
I'm Rabbit. I'm co-host of From Embers, which is an anarchist radio show and podcast based out of Kingston, Ontario. So just like 3 hours in that direction across the Ontario border. And From Embers is kind of like a dual purpose show in that it's a community radio show on CFRC locally in Kingston. So part of the purpose is like having a radical presence in that space of that radio station and also putting our ideas out on the airwaves to whichever random Kingstonians are tuning in, like on the dial in their cars or at home or whatever. But then we also podcast most of our content with the goal of, I guess, sort of talking about anarchist politics and things that are relevant to anarchists kind of specifically north of the Canada-US border. That's our sort of scope. We started that partly because we wanted to hang out at the radio station more and meet the young radicals who sort of go in there, and partly because we sort of felt that in like the anarchist media world that we could lend kind of like a specific analysis that contends with the Canadian state and like the particular enemies that we face like on here in this like really broad amorphous context that maybe does or doesn't actually exist in a unified way. But that it wasn't being like, it wasn't just duplicating things that already existed in the U.S. It would be like, it would be interesting to think about like what is it about living like under that federal government that like makes things like different for anarchists. I don't know if that's always what we talk about, but that was certainly the framing at the outset of the show.
Yeah. Great. And so I have a lot of questions in front of me, but I'll start a bit more broad, but I do want to get to some more behind-the-scenes things maybe later on in the conversation. But for right now, I would like to know, why are podcasts so popular, especially radical podcasts? What's the appeal? Why is there such an interest in them? And it's a really general question, but if anyone wants to jump in. Don't make me call on it.
I maybe just start, and then I think it's like it's like mobility culture, so smartphones really like the ability to listen to podcasts, not only in the tradition. So like with radio, people tended to listen a lot, like when they're doing the dishes, driving their car. Nowadays, I think mostly people only listen to radio driving the car, because why would you listen to radio at home? Whatever. That's bad joke. And then I think with like the ability to listen to podcasts, like riding on the metro, on your commute, but still doing the dishes, like whatever, there's just like a lot of different options. And also I think that like with new generations now, what we see with media is like there's this kind of culture of like on demand. So that whole format of like the TV grid or the radio grid of like having to turn on the radio and you're kind of like, you have to listen to whatever show is on right then, or you have to watch whatever TV show is on, is like I think like young kids coming up today like would not understand that concept. Like, what do you mean I gotta watch Seinfeld at 9 p.m.? Like, it's on YouTube. So I think, but that's actually like a really appealing thing to me, is just that ability like to be able to listen to like a show from like the Radio Anarchiste from like Paris, like whatever time of day you want, or like From Embers, whatever time of day you want. So I think that's what's really appealing to people.
I agree with all of that. I think there are like positive and negative aspects of that shift also. Not that I'm mad about the podcast format in particular, but that I think in general there's like a huge cultural shift towards smartphone culture, and that people, it's really hard to pull people away from their phones. And I've noticed like
that in my life, at least, there are like less people publishing thoughts as like DIY, kind of just like, oh, I just put out this scene or whatever, and
right.
more people online, which includes blogging and other text-based things still as well.
Yeah.
And also I've noticed that somehow as part of that, audio becomes more appealing, but I can't exactly understand why that is. Like, we do like a reading group with some friends in Kingston, and I've noticed that stuff that's on the Resonance Audio Distro, which is a super cool project that makes zines into like audiobooks, is way more popular because folks can listen to it while they're doing something else, which is cool, and I like that project, but I also kind of wonder what the implications are that like people are so busy that they can't immerse themselves in a text or in just a conversation or something anymore because it has to be phone-based. So yeah, I'm definitely making the podcast. I'm definitely, there's lots of things about that that are cool. The on-demand, I agree, is interesting because cable TV is definitely garbage. Like, I don't miss cable television.
Right.
But I do wonder if there's a kind of immediacy and urgency about smartphone culture that makes podcasts more popular that also perhaps has negative implications for our cultures a bit.
Right, and I have a follow-up question to that because that's really interesting to me, the idea that, you know, people want to listen to something audio, it's like they can keep doing that while they're moving around. But what does that mean as people whose voice is on those podcasts? Are you, you know, do you feel like you're a personality? Do you feel like you have to, you know, be interesting? Do you have to keep that attention in a way that would be different if you were just writing? Like, what do you guys think about being personalities?
I don't think of myself as a personality. I think, like, for me, a lot of the process is about, like, having conversations with people I find really interesting. Like, I'm doing a lot of it for myself, and so I don't worry too much about the listener and, like, what their experience... I don't really care what their experience
right.
is like.
Right.
You know, I'm, like, kind of doing it for myself, and so I don't think a whole lot about that.
Yelling into the void.
Yeah. And, like, maybe some people listen to us sometimes, but, like, unclear. Yeah, I feel like we were talking about that just as we were setting up about how, like, I don't really know, like, who, like, what people think about what I'm doing that much. I don't think of them doing their dishes while they're listening to the, you know, what I've recorded.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was already, like, an established artist, and my name is in the title of my podcast, and so it's, like, it is, like, a weird thing to, like, navigate, like, cult of personality stuff with, like, anarchist politics. I think, like, you know, there are, like, I'm generally turned off by people who are, like, too flamboyant and too, flamboyant in the sense of, like, oh, I'm Joe Rogan, here's my joke, here's my, you know, and it's like, yeah, like, just
but if he's listening, you're just gonna
sure. just like
false feelings. Like
no, I just feel like being a character in general. Like, it's the ideas that are important, and I do think there is like a like when you're listening to someone, you do develop a kind of an affinity with that voice. Like, you know, like for instance, like I think of you know, Revolutionary Left Radio, and I don't necessarily agree with everything on there, but like I'm the guy, the host of it. I'm like, I feel like this guy's my friend. He is my friend, but it's like he's like, you know, he's like this warm, meditating kind of person who's just like, you know, I think listening to it, you feel like, oh, that's my friend. And I think there's like, there's benefits to it, but then there's also, you know, again, when people develop too strong of a cult of personality, it's easy for them to abuse. Like, I think of this guy, Dr. Bones, who was recently called out for being like a manipulative abuser, and he was someone that a bunch of us let. I was weary of how much he played up his personality, and then when all this stuff came to light, I was like, oh, I guess all those red flags should have been heeded. And so I think in anarchist spaces, we should be wary of people who put themselves out there.
Right, and that ended the Guillotine podcast
yeah.
as well. Right?
Can I jump in and say one thing about that too? Like, what's really interesting with podcasts, and again, like how it differs from radio, is most people listen to podcasts on headphones, and just that aspect, it like has a cognitive shift, I think, because a lot of people who listen to podcasts describe this like feeling of like intimacy or closeness and trust, right? Like with the people who you're talking, you kind of like, it like, yeah, like for me, the podcast I listen to, I feel like I know the host. I feel like in a weird way, like they're my friends. And you kind of, but then like you develop nice relationships with like listeners over the years where people are like, your podcast has really like changed my life a lot, and I'm just so used to listening to it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you're speaking very closely to people, which is kind of nice. And just like one quick thing about like the cult of personality or being personalities, like I personally feel like you know, as an anarchist, I'm not against like the idea of leaders or leadership rather. Like I think that leadership is really important, but I think we need like more leaders. Like I think all of us in a sense like have to be leaders, and I think as anarchists it's like our work to cultivate that sense of leadership, you know, if we want to build a movement to overthrow the state and change the world. And through podcasting I see that as like trying to make space for the voices that like you wouldn't normally hear in podcasts.
I feel a lot of things about this question. I think, for one, there's kind of, like, some podcasts are more about the personality than others. And I think a lot of times when we think of podcasts, we think of what I would refer to as kind of, like, the banter format, where you hear the hosts speaking to each other a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think in that case, like, that is totally about, like, yeah, like, the intimacy of the relationship and, like, knowing the people as people. And that's not personally, like, what I am doing, so I can't really speak to that level of, like, persona. Certainly I have an interview style, though. Like, I think people who listen to the show regularly do definitely get to know me in a sense, like what kinds of questions I ask, probably a lot of what my politics are, just by like the kind of angles that I bring to things, which I struggle with. Like I'm not sure how I feel about that because I've never done it before. Like I've never been, For Members is a young show, I guess, compared to these two shows. I don't know much about.
We started in September.
Okay. Yeah, so this is our 1 year, like we launched for Last Book Fair, so like this is like our 1 year anniversary, and we've done like 40 shows collectively, but I have not done 40 shows. And before that, I mean, I write a lot, but I've always done it pretty, like, anonymously. Not like I believe it's truly anonymous, but it's like, I don't put my name to it, whereas For Members has more continuity. And I'm going to see how that goes for me, because I've never really done it before, and I certainly wouldn't want it to become something where I feel like I'm, like, a media personality, and I'm, like, separate from, like, anarchist spaces or movements that I like cover or something. Like I don't want that kind of role. Some people do want that kind of role, but like for me that's not what my show has been about as a goal. So like I basically want to not be a personality, but I think that's not possible. I don't think it's possible really to talk to people that much with one's own voice and one's own tone and not become some kind of persona. And certainly other shows I listen to with varying degrees of relationships to that, from like people who are like their podcast is their name and the point is knowing them, to people who you can tell are trying to bring some degree of anonymity, but you still know it's the same voice every time. And I think in all cases I relate to them as personalities, so like I am comfortable with the fact that people probably do the same with me, I guess.
And I'm hearing from everyone a lot of talk about friendship and intimacy with the voice coming through your phone, and I think that's something I really do want to say. I'm the moderator, so I have no opinion on this whatsoever. But I feel like that's something that I would like to linger on a little bit is, does this help with alienation? That's a huge part of being anarchist, is being alienated with capitalism, with a system that's built on patriarchy. Is this a way to simulate closeness? Is it actual closeness? Is it good for the struggle?
No.
Is it bad for the struggle?
Good for the struggle, yes. No, it's not actual closeness. Like, I think, like, internet relationships do not substitute for, in real life, human connection, and that's, like, I think partly why we live in an increasingly alienated world despite increasing connection on various platforms. And I think our format has many advantages over, like, Instagram or Facebook as a platform, but I think for the same reasons, that kind of connection can never hold a candle to the kinds of things we build by actually like struggling together and knowing each other in person. Like it's not. I don't think it does. I think as a whole, that online life increases alienation.
Yeah.
Like that.
I totally agree with that, but one thing I would say, like, this is an interesting thing. Like, I'm sure we've all had this experience of being in public places and cities and looking around, and it's so dystopian because everyone around you will be on your phone, like, usually me, including myself, and I look up, I'm like, ah, holy shit, I spend a lot of time in New York City right now because my partner's living down there, and in New York it's like times 10 or times 1,000 or whatever. And so it's like, you know, I appreciate the fact that people listen to a lot of podcasts, for example, when they're riding the metro or the subway. But then one thing, I listen to most of my podcasts when I'm doing that. But then one thing I'm really self-conscious about is like when you have your headphones on, yeah, you're alienated, you're disconnected from like your fellow person that you're like sharing that public space with. So you're not hearing like the beautiful busking or whatever the busking that's going on, like the metro, you know?
Whoa.
I know. Depends who it is, depends what station you're at. And this is what I think about a lot. If someone's having a mental health crisis or, you know, like folks asking for change, you're also disconnected from them in those public spaces. And this is just happening so much. And we can't separate it because we're partly complicit in creating that bubble. But at the same time, I would argue with smartphones, with like social media, with online culture, I would really argue that like as anarchists, we need to be in that culture while at the same time trying to draw people away from it. Because that, like, if we're just honest, that's where conversations are happening. That's where political debates are happening these days. Like, that's where the people are at, like that's the new town square, like it or not, and so I think we have to destroy that culture too, maybe from the inside, I don't know.
Oof.
Yeah.
All right, hot take.
I mean, the only thing I would add to that is like I totally agree with all of that, but like when I think about like interviews that I've done with organizers or activists or sort of like behind the scenes journalist kind of stuff, or when I think about like it's going down, This Is America podcast, where like every week they're talking to organizers, people at actions, people at events. I think when people who aren't like engaged in struggle or like on the sidelines, when they hear like these raw conversations with people who are engaged in struggle and like hear about the positives, the negatives, the wins, the losses, the failures, the successes, like I think that maybe that doesn't necessarily tie into alienation, but it does like connect everyone on like on the level of like, you know, it's not like magical, mythical people out there in the world who are out there like, you know, fighting gentrification or organizing workplaces. Like, here's how you can do it. And I think like that in itself is, it's like a, you know, the fact that we listen to podcasts is a byproduct of we live in this hyper alienated commuter world, but it's also, you know, that's the way the spectacle works. It sucks us into it, and we can fight on it as a terrain.
I agree with all that. And I think just one thing it's making me think of is how, at a personal level, for me, it breaks a lot. Like, doing a podcast, so obviously that's a different aspect of that same question, but is like a way of breaking alienation. And like a lot of my own like coming into that process of just being like, why don't I just make a podcast like with my co-host Audrey, who couldn't be here today, came from a feeling of being really burnt out, of being kind of not really knowing like how to engage in ways that weren't like contributing to my exhaustion, and part of the way that I like the part of the answer for me was like engaging really deeply in conversation, and then through that kind of finding niches and like maybe ways that I could be involved in ways that made sense for me, and like through a podcast like that conversation can continue in a way that like maybe I wouldn't have engaged otherwise.
Yeah, it's like recharging.
Yeah totally.
I think that's an interesting connection to what Aaron was saying as well, is the idea that, you know, you have to meet people where they're at. If they're, you know, online culture is, you know, those where those conversations are happening. And it's like, if you're burnt out from doing like quote unquote real life things, you know, if there's a way for you to stay engaged and stay connected, and that's where you're at, that's also like a contribution. And I'm happy that you talked about the creator experience, because I do want to pivot to talking about behind the scenes a little bit, like what goes into making a podcast. Is there one of the things I was thinking of when I was conceiving of this panel was it's almost a cliche right now, people saying like, oh, I should start a podcast, you know, like, it's like everyone and their dog is talking about it, but few people do it, few people do it well, all of you do it very well, and so what goes into it, what kind of things would you recommend to someone who's thinking of starting their own podcast? Maybe also what kind of feedback do you get on your podcast that, you know, might be something that people who listen might not know about?
I mean, I do an interview-based podcast, which is a particular kind of thing, so a lot of the work of it is networking and trying to find people to come on the show, which I love. Like, that's my favorite thing about doing it, is that I get to, like, initiate conversations with people who I don't necessarily have a great excuse to talk to about the thing they're doing just for no reason, but then I can be like, I have this show, do you want to be on it? And it's like, it gives me this platform to ask people questions who are doing stuff that's interesting to me or slightly different from what I would do, or like I'm obsessed with it and I want to just put it out and give it a platform. Like, I really love that. I like that I get to connect with folks from like kind of around the like anarchist milieu, really broadly writ, who I don't see every day, which for me is like what I personally get out of it is like a lot about that. And that also is a lot of the work that goes into the show, is like emailing back and forth with people, talking about security concerns, talking about what kinds of questions are you going to ask me, why should I do this, should I not do it, and trying to like have that whole relationship building side of things, I think is like for me the hardest part, because I don't think people should come on my show. I think people should come on the show like if they want to and if they're going to get something out of that conversation too. So there's a lot of that back and forth, and then there's also a lot of production work, which I'm sure other people can also totally speak to. From Embers is edited, which is I don't think necessarily, but necessary for me, because I can't do the perfect like 50-minute interview that's all in great sound bites that just goes out as is. So that takes like hours of my week on weeks when I do a show, and then I get nerdy about like choosing the right music and like, you know, like that stuff takes time too, but it's fun. Yeah, and then in terms of feedback, I get more feedback on From Embers than I typically get if I put a piece of writing out at the book fair, which I find interesting, because often the things I put out at the book fair I think are more critical and important than the things I say at From Embers, but that doesn't translate to more feedback necessarily. And I also get a lot of technical feedback on From Embers from like other folks who do anarchist podcasts through the Channel Zero Network, which is great, and was great for us starting out too, to have someone be like, yo, I can't hear you on this episode, like you should fix that. And, like, that's actually really useful, because I don't know how to do that really that well. So that's also feedback that's super useful that I get. But I don't get, like, what I don't have is a sense of, like, who are all the people who listen to the show and what do they think about it and what are they getting out of this interview? Because I mostly hear feedback from people who I already know.
Okay.
Or occasional, like, random emails, which is cool. Like, that never happens, right? Like, no one's ever like, hey, I read your zine. Like, I don't know you. But, like, people do email the podcast sometimes, which is interesting. But it's, like, a sample. Somewhere out there, there's all these other people who also hear the show, and I don't know who they are. And it's interesting.
We haven't really talked much about the Channel Zero Network, but I mean, and like maybe you should talk about that more because you were on since the beginning. But like, one thing I would say, if folks don't know about the Channel Zero Network, it's a network of anarchist podcasts. So a lot of the podcasts that we do are, you know, involved in that. And one thing I really love about the idea is it's kind of one of those things that for me is coming back to like the radio station principle, if we want to call it. Housing content under one like nice tent, or just because the thing like with podcasting right now, the exciting but also intimidating is like the internet is just like awash in content. So there's literally like millions of hours of podcasts out there, and you're like, what am I going to listen to? And me, I'm like a bit of a snob when it comes to like audio quality. Like I just can't listen to something that's recorded badly, and it might be like the most fascinating interview ever, and like, no, like not going to do it. Sorry, but I know that's snobby, but like, yeah. but so I would say, like, you know, my advice to people starting up is always just like take the time at the beginning to just like look into production techniques. Like the gear is like really affordable. You can buy like an extremely high quality USB mic for like $200, and yeah, like that's a lot of money for some people, but then I always compare that to like how much you got to spend to do video, and it's like nothing, right? Mm-hmm. But just like coming back to Channel Zero, it's like, it's really important for me, like this idea of like organizing, collective organizing together, because like the process of producing a podcast, at least for me, can be a really solitary experience.
It's lonely.
I know, and I really don't like that, because like when I got involved in community radio, like radio stations, community radio stations in all of our cities are like these beautiful like brick and mortar, like actual spaces that you can go into and meet people. And I met people when I got involved in CKUT here in Montreal from like all sorts of different countries and like different movements, and it was like I just wanted to be in that space all the time. And now my studio is my living room, and it's like not the same thing. And so I love this idea of like, it's, I know it's a virtual space, but like it's bringing content together where now someone is like, if I want to find Anarchist Podcast, I can just go to one website or like one RSS feed or whatever, and it's there. And I think that's really important work in terms of like, otherwise it's just like this unnavigable ocean.
Yeah, and here we all are together, you know, hanging out together for the first time, and you know, we've been in the digital space and now we're in person. Yeah, and the Channel Zero Network, it's like a really humble thing. Like when we started it, I think some of us thought like it's gonna be like anarcho fucking Huffington Post podcast network, like this is gonna be the biggest thing. And then like we tried to create an app, and then like the logistics of like once we got the app developed, getting it published was incredibly complicated, and we just basically had to abandon the app. And then, you know, so it's like, but running an horizontally run project on Consensus with anarchists from all over North America is, you know, it's awesome. And it's a, you know, for me as like a nerd who grew up with, you know, reading Crime Think and you know, some media videos, it's like it feels really good to be part of that ecosystem and kind of have all these people building that together. And as far as like what goes into my podcast, it's kind of like what Rabbit was saying. It's like I'm really ADHD about my shit, so it's like I can't really focus, and so I like ping like 10 people at once, be like, I want to read your book. Are you, if I read it, will you talk to me about it? I really like this album you made. Are you down to come on? Hey, I liked Hey Demand Utopia. I really like what you're doing. Are you down to come on sometime? And then like I just kind of like obsessively think about these things in the back of my head for like sometimes months on end, and like, you know, like it takes me 4 months to read a book. And so it's like, I, you know, if I'm going to read a book, I want to do a podcast on it. And so it's like, I want to make sure that person's not an owl or something. And yeah, and that's, and mine is interview based also. And, you know, and I think like one of the most important technical things for people to really learn if they want to make podcasts is how to mix vocals and how to compress. And like my advice is just to really know how to over, like a compressor is like a mastering tool that takes audio and squishes it together so that the lows rise and the highs, the louder things go down. And so
some very granular here.
But I'm just saying, like, it's one of the most important things. If you listen to a podcast and you can't hear what they're saying, it's because they're not using their compression properly. So I'll have a podcast episode that I record on my phone, phone, or sometimes just with my laptop speakers because my mic is broken. And as long as I, you know, EQ it in a way that like the bass is cut out and it is clear and compressed really well, it reads well. So anyone, you know, listening to this, like, learn compression. That's the best thing I can play. And the worst part about having a podcast is having to do the write-ups. Like, I hate the write-ups. I dread writing them.
Because we're not writers.
Yeah. It's like I just spent 4 hours editing this thing, 2 weeks obsessing about it. You know, I took all this time, and now I have to write this stupid thing after I designed this graphic. Like, that's the worst part for me. But the rest of it's fun.
Do you ever get feedback? What kind of feedback do you get?
I've gotten some really, I mean, again, for a while, it's a very lonely project. Like, you don't get feedback.
Right.
But some of the coolest feedback I got was one time, my wife was a teacher in Denver Public Schools, and somehow at, like, some educational development thing, you know, she was talking about, you know, her son Winston or something, or her son, and made a mention of her husband or something, and then some guy's like, is your husband the host of the Soulcast? And she's like, yeah. And he wasn't an anarchist. He was just some random teacher, you know? And that was cool. And other really cool, I did a How to Do FOIA podcast with a friend from Unicorn Riot. And it was just like, how do you file a Freedom of Information Act request? And how do you deal with getting that stuff? And a couple of years later, after that podcast, when I was interviewing the Olympia fracking blockade, they were like, yeah, we listened to your podcast on how to do FOIA requests, and then we just started FOIAing everything about this port. And then we discovered that this was a logistics hub for fracking supplies, and so that's why we targeted it. And I was like, hell yeah. And then my last piece of thing was when I was moving out to Maine, I kept talking about, oh, I'm going to buy a farm and move back to my homeland or whatever, and if you're a radical in New England, get at me, you know. And so all these anarchist farmers from New England started reaching out to me. And so, like, when I got to Maine, some people who work at an unnamed seed company reached out to me and was like, hey, I have like $500 of free seeds I want to give you. And I was like, great, that's, I don't have to buy anything. And then someone else reached out to me and was like, hey, I got pawpaw trees and chestnut trees I'd like to give you, you know. And it's like, so it's like, that, like, when someone sends you a tree in the mail when they listen to your podcast, like, that is one of the most beautiful things. You know, I'm like, I don't know who you are. I love you. I want to be your friend. Like, and he never even responded to my last email. It was like 2 weeks ago. I was like, thank you so much. I can't believe you did this. And he never responded. And it's like, so, yeah, it's kind of a lonely thing. There's not a lot of, you don't get a lot of feedback. You're talking into the void. But, again, like, through creating community with other radical podcasters and asking for feedback. I think if you ask for feedback, you'll get it. But sometimes people have to be prompted.
And so that's some advice you'd give to people who want to start a podcast, is solicit trees?
Yeah, whatever your thing. And people have also given me weed, too. So all kinds of trees. Yeah.
I think your advice about compressing sound is a really good one. Like, on point.
That's important.
Yeah. We actually put in conversation in person two people who have a shared experience every for our episodes. So a lot of it is like, a lot of the process for us is, for lack of a better word, is like curating, like thinking about like what kind of struggles do we want to put in conversation or particular work or whatever the topic is that week. And so there's like that kind of process of like, okay, what conversations kind of can work together. And I'm really lucky because Audrey has like come up with some really like interesting ideas of like what kind of conversations to, or like who to put together in a conversation. I'm trying to think of like an example. We recently had two people come on, one person who works at the Frappru, so talking about like housing rights and like different kind of work that they've done, and then someone who does direct accompaniment for chômage. I don't like unemployment.
Employment.
Yeah, like employment. Thank you. Insurance. And like how, yeah, like in a lot of ways, like those are like acting at very different levels and like a very different analysis on different issues. But at the same time, like they're all really connected struggles about like survival and having to interact with the state just to survive and like the struggles in for folks to like, in doing that. So yeah, there's a lot of like process of like what kind of conversations to put together, and I feel like in my case I didn't have a lot of the skill set to make a podcast, and what so there's some of those things that I've learned in the process, but also if I had a piece of advice is like also there might be people who are interested in helping out who have those skill set And so I ended up like, yeah, so I co-host with someone else, and like someone who's really into editing the podcast like helps out, because like that makes it a little bit easier. Yeah, so it's been really great of like connecting with people who like maybe don't want to have their voices recorded but would be really happy to contribute to the podcast. And so I feel like there are other ways also of getting around like some of the challenges that like the back end of it represent.
Yeah, and I would say it's only as lonely as you make it. Like, it depends on your like how you work and your personal style. Like, for some people, writing is super solitary, and for some people, it's a super collaborative process, and I think it's kind of the same. Like, for members, as a collective, we talk to the show all the time. We also do it out of a community radio station, for, like, we specifically do, so it's, like, it's actually quite social. Like, I totally socialize, although then, you know, sometimes it's solitary when it's, like, 6 a.m., and I'm like, it's on tonight. I'm still editing this thing. And, like, that's super lonely for sure. But mostly, I think you can make projects social if you try to, like, intentionally make them social. And you can also use it as your time to do a personal project if you want to do it that way. Like, I think that's also, you know, a lot of us lack collective organizing, but also a lot of us lack time for personal reflection because we're doing a lot of stuff in groups all the time. And I think it really could be either. Like, it could go, like, it can be the group project you want it to be. It can also be like your little, you know, like at home vanity project that's just for you, and that's okay. Like,
yeah, and along those lines, what I would say is mine is totally a vanity, self-directed education project. Like, I started doing episodes, I got really into permaculture, and then when I started going to this permaculture stuff, there were all these like anarchistic themes, but like the culture of it is very white, it's very liberal, it's very eco-consumer. So I still wanted to do more stuff and insert a more anarchist analysis into permaculture. And I was like, can I get away with this? Can I get away with talking about plants on an anarchist podcast? And hell yeah. And like, people loved it. And like, even people who don't garden are like, oh my God, I've never thought about vegetables that way, you know? And I know Aaron just launched a podcast about hockey, you know? And it's like, is it the same thing for you? Like, can I get away with this?
Yeah, it's a weird space to navigate, but it's been interesting.
Well, it almost sounds as though, like, another piece of advice or, like, thought, a thread for someone who would want to start a podcast is, like, if you can imagine it and you're kind of interested in talking about these things, you can totally do it.
Yeah. And you should do it.
And you should do it. Absolutely.
I wanted to circle back to something that was mentioned a few times. You mentioned, you know, people who might not want their voice recorded, and Rabbit, you mentioned also, you know, talking to people about security as a way, as a thing that you put effort into when you're negotiating the episode and interviews and things like that. And just because anarchy and bad politics sometimes requires a bit of privacy and clandestinity and all of these things, and our voices are a biometric, and so how do you, what steps do you all take to navigate that? What can we do to circumvent any repression that might come from talking about our sketchy
I mean, I, like, first of all, try to be really clear that there's no pressure to come on the show, and that people should think about their own sense of threat and their own, like, choices about what aspects of themselves to put online before they decide, because I think there's lots of people who, like, maybe don't want to and shouldn't be on someone's podcast with their voice, and that's totally fine. If people still want to do it, we do try to work with people for their anonymity to the extent that is possible for us, but also, like, try to be really clear that we cannot promise anything, because we're not, like, security experts or anything like that. No one uses their real name usually on For Members unless they're already a personality, like they're talking about a book they authored or a show they already do as their name. Not because we don't let them, but just because that's sort of become the norm on the show, is that people are, like, either first name only or, like, no name or whatever. And we've done some playing around with, like, either re-recording things that we've done, so, like, doing an interview and then having our co-hosts, like, transcribe and retape the interview with their voice so that it's only the For Members' voices on the tape that gets broadcast, which I would say is a pretty good way to avoid putting one's voice print online, although not totally flawless, because there would still be turns of phrase. Like, there would be ways, I think, still to, like, potentially match that to other samples.
Super labor-intensive.
It's also, like, a lot of work. And we've also done, for people who are already, like, audio personalities but don't necessarily want the whole audience to know that they're the same person. We've toyed with, like, voice modulation a little bit, like, changing slightly the, like, pitch and tempo of their voice, which I think is very unlikely to fool forensics, but does sort of fool the listener a little bit into being like, yeah, this isn't that podcaster that I already know or whatever, or that, like, other radio show that I just listened to. Like, that's also been something that we've kind of played with. We always say when we've done that, like, we don't just, like, pass that off as, like, this is a person or something. Yeah, so those are two things we've tried. Three things, I guess. Like, don't come on the show. Come on the show, we'll record it. Or come on the show and we'll, like, mess with your voice, depending on your different model. Like, depending on, like, what the concerns are. But it's, like, anarchist media has, like, more responsibility to make sure it's not, like, snitching on the movements that it's engaging with than it does to be good, I think. Like, it's actually so much more important that, like, people aren't being put at risk the way that the corporate media puts people at risk by people among us than that I get to do that interview or that show or whatever that I wanted to do. Like, I think, like, and that's, like, that's shared by, like, at least our collective, that, like, that would be, like, definitely it's never worth, like, compromising someone's comfort with their own, like, sense of privacy for the sake of, like, the show. The show can just not come out. Like, it's not, yeah, I don't feel like, for me, that doesn't seem like a balance so much as, like, a concern to keep in mind in case you accidentally do it.
But, I mean, I would maybe slightly disagree in the sense that, well, I mean, like, for sure, no, I agree about everything you said about protecting people's privacy. So maybe it's not a disagreement, but maybe, like, maybe try to build on that is I also think, and I'm thinking about this with regards to, like, neo-Nazi podcasts, and so maybe people know this, but, like, the biggest Canadian neo-Nazi podcast got doxxed last year, which was awesome, and they had to pull all their content. It was called This Hour Has 88 Minutes, and so, like, that happened around the same time that, Zeiger from Daily Stormer got doxxed in Montreal, and so that's great, right? Like, that's part of the work that anti-fascists need to be doing right now. Obviously, we don't want the same to happen, but I mean, I, like, my own personal feeling with anti-fascist politics right now, which is a, you know, crucial space that we need to be organizing and engaging and occupying to stop the rise of the far right. I feel that, you know, those who need to protect their anonymity, like, definitely do that. But I also feel that it's really important at this point to show, like, that we are millions of times stronger than they are and to put forward, like, a really broad movement and voice against fascism and against the far right. And I would love to hear more anti-fascist podcasts. Like, I know Montréal Antifasciste started one, and like, they were just basically, like, not using their names, but, like, weren't doing any voice modulation. And I just, like, I think there is a risk of people on the left and in anarchist movements getting doxxed. We know that. But at the same time, I think that, and I'm just speaking from my own experience, sometimes that risk is, like, overblown, and we need to be a little bit more bold in terms of just, like, being a f***ing anti-fascist is so normal and so right. Being an anarchist is right. And, like, and, you know, like, and personally, I think that's the way we're going to win people over with the propaganda work that we're trying to do. But yes, like, I think that there's people who are doing frontline anti-fascist or whatever, like, other militant work that need to have their identities protected. And I think, like, podcasting and radio, for sure, like, it's flawed, but, like, it's better than video in the sense of, like, protecting people's identities.
And obviously my voice print is super findable now. Like, there's, like, tons of content of my voice that I have put out there too, which is also a choice that I'm just making. It's just, like, if someone cares about my voice, whether it's because they're fascists or because they, like, care about our show for some reason, or they just care about me for other reasons, like, that's just out. And, like, that is a choice that I think people grapple with in all kinds of ways when they put themselves out there. Like, speaking at events is like that too. Mm. Being in a video, being in a podcast, like, we all just have our own senses of, like, how public do I want to be about my shit? And, like, that's just, like, something to keep in mind. And there's a huge range of choices that anarchists make, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's been times where, like, in Denver, like, when I was organizing, you know, I wouldn't I would come to an organizing anonymously under, you know, blocked up with everyone else, like, not a soul, and, like, you know, and I knew the cops wanted to arrest me, but they just could never figure out who I was. And so it's like, I think there is, like, there is some strength in, like, putting for individuals to be out there and saying, yeah, like, these Nazis, you know, I did a podcast with around the Discord leaks from Unicorn Riot, and I started noticing there was all this traffic coming from the Daily Stormer, and I just got, like, put on some, like, extremist academic list of, like, verified Twitter accounts, and it, like, right before I got on stage, it freaked me out. I was really scared, and I was like, oh my god, this fucking sucks, I'm, you know, but, you know, but yeah, as far as, like, protecting identities, that's not something because I'm not really interviewing militants, per se, often, or doing journalism, that it's not really, it's not something I've really had to deal with.
Yeah, same here. I mean, it sort of depends on the episode, but, you know, if you're talking about amateur wrestling, it's not like, yeah, I mean, you could still talk about people wanting to maintain their privacy. But maybe there's, like, less. Although I see you.
I don't know, I feel like I'm
against both these points, because I feel like, actually, like, people's privacy is their own, and they shouldn't have to explain why they want privacy. Like, I do think that, like, there's lots of, like, there's a whole range of reasons people wouldn't want to put their voice on the internet, and it's not just, like, I'm talking about a militant struggle that I'm doing. It could also just be, like, their own sense of risk in their life for, like, you know, like, safeguarding, like, potential future, like, fears about, like, security, or also just, like, maybe they don't want, like, their parents to hear them, because they're, like, you know, like, there's so many reasons that could be, and you don't need to know why, and I really try to not be, like, oh, given that this content is sketchy, do you want this thing, but instead be, like, what are your concerns about this, even if you're, like, some media personality who I expect has no concerns, and then, like, work from there when possible, because it's, like, it is, like, a choice, and we should have people who are, like, super public spokespeople, but we also should have people who don't have to be that. And some people are interesting and worth talking to who aren't going to want to become public media personalities and will, like, miss a lot of nuance, I think, generally, if, like, only the voices of people who want to attach their name to those voices are out there in that space. Like, I think it's worth it to try a little bit to navigate that anyway. Because I also don't really, I don't mostly cover, like, struggles either. Like, I don't mostly talk to people who are, like, I'm doing this thing, I'm here on the ground, like Unicorn Riot or whatever. Like, it's definitely not, it has not been like that. Maybe I would do that, but it has never been that way. But it's more about just, like, I don't know, like, people's sense of themselves and privacy and, like, how they want their identity to be online or not.
And thanks.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like there's two different things coming out here, not just how do I protect the privacy of people I'm interviewing or participating, but also your own personal privacy and, you know, avoiding getting doxxed and, you know, what kind of risk level do you take? And, you know, and I think also, you know, it sounds like there's a spectrum there too. And I was talking about, you know, oh, I might interview someone about amateur wrestling, and, you know, that might be a lower risk for the person coming on your show, but also, you know, there's harassment of just being a person whose voice is out there, you know, and that could happen. Or even, in terms of doxing, I think that's an interesting way to think about it as well, because, like what you were saying, Aaron, is, you know, there's, the, like, understanding the dimensions of that risk. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think it's a funny thing that the online fascists tried to, like, throw back at us is, you know, well, we'll dox you, and it's like, okay, we'll call my day job and tell them that I don't like racists. You know, like, sure. You know, like, how that's, it's not an equal result that you're expecting, and so that's something that I do think is interesting, is, you know, what kind of risk are you all as people whose voice is out there taking on, and also, you know, is there a risk just in being out there? Just people harassing you because of who you are, politically, or even just, you know, because they don't like hearing certain voices or something. So I guess I would... I'm interested in what your thoughts are on sort of, I guess, putting yourself out there. And I guess that's why I asked a little bit earlier about feedback you get, if there's any pushback, anything that makes you hesitant to just be who you are.
Tankies, you know, I'm just afraid they're gonna bring me to the guillotine.
Oh, yeah?
I'm just kidding.
For me, the risks are like social and emotional more than they're like about my sense of security. Like, I already in my life have chosen somewhat to like to speak publicly a little bit. Like, I think that like I am completely at peace with my voice being on the show for like forensics or for like doxing or whatever. Like that I have like accepted, but I don't have a Facebook account. Like, I don't like to, like, I don't want my identity to be mainly formed through, like, social media, and I don't want my identity to mainly be about, like, projection and, like, curating a persona to be, especially with other anarchists, especially with people who I want to, like, join in struggle. So I think there are a lot of risks to putting myself out there like that in terms of the ways it can separate, like, media personalities from, like, people who are not, or, like, people who are, like, participating in a really specific kind of way where it's, like, I cover things, I generate content with people who are not, and, like, to me that's a huge risk, but it's not, like, the kind of risk that maybe we're talking about here, I guess. But I certainly, like, I think about that every episode I put out. I'm, like, oh, do I want to, like, associate myself with this thing? And then I'm like, oh, do I want to care about that? Like, is that the kind of person I want to be that's, like, curating an online identity for people to consume? Like, it's not. It's definitely not. So I certainly worry about putting myself out there as a person and, like, do not have an easy answer to that concern. Whereas I think the other stuff is very possible to be like, yeah, like, what threats do I face? Can I accept them? Can I deal with them if they come up? The other thing I think is harder for me, at least, to answer. And I'd be curious if other people have had thoughts about, like, that dimension of it. But maybe it's not the question that you were asking, Muggs. So,
yeah. One thing, like, and this goes, I think, beyond podcasting, but I think, like understanding and evaluating risk and security culture is a discussion we need to constantly be having, because I think that one thing that I see happening right now is there is a security culture that gets kind of taken for granted in anarchist scenes. So, like, just an example is, like, going to a demo masked up, no problem, like, you know, like, all power to the black blocs, but, like, I think there needs to be an understanding of, like, why you're doing that rather than just, like, an impulse. And I've talked to a lot of people where it's, like, it comes from more of, like, an impulse rather than an understanding of, like, this is the level of risk that we're willing to take on. And I'm going to bring it back just to the example of, like, anti-fascist organizer arena, because I think that's, it's very rife, and it's a very clear example of, like, where a certain level of security culture is needed. And so, like, for example, it's like we have comrades who are going out there and, like, hospitalizing fascists, and, like, that's f-ing important work and needs to keep happening, right? And those people, and I'm not saying, okay, like, I know it's a very macho thing also to be like, that's the most important work. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say at all. Like, that's one aspect of the work, right? Doing the legal support and everything else, the day-to-day organizing is, like, it all works in conjunction with each other, right? But like, I think that we understand that there's, like, depending on, like, what level of risk you want to take on in the movement, there's a certain level of security that needs to go with that. I think for me, it's, like, I've been doing media for a long time. I've, like, spoken out, like, very publicly, like, in mainstream media. I've had, like, the far right make memes about me. And, like, my own personal feeling is just, like, I'm Jewish. Like, my ancestors, like, never had a choice of whether or not to be anti-fascist. Like, it's a life and death situation for, like, a lot of people. I mean, I have, like, a certain amount of white privilege, so it's, like, you know, like, it's not necessarily the same questions for me, but I'm, like, thinking about it a lot more in terms of just, like, because it's, like, I've spoken out, like, even though I had these memes made about me, like, nothing has happened, right? And so just, like, sometimes we, like, misunderstand too, because, like, sure, it's, like, one thing, like, here's, like, Faith Goldie, like, might come after you because, like, she does that, right? But I think sometimes, like, the level of risk is, I'm not going to say always overblown, but it can be overblown. And I think we really need to understand, because I just think it's crucial that, like, you know, it's like, I want to know that, like, my neighbor is anti-fascist, and I want like, anti-fascism to be, like, f-ing mainstreamed at this point, to the point where it's, like, you don't need to be, like, part of the black bloc to feel like you're anti-fascist. Like, you can just be, like, Monsieur et Madame Napaki, you know? And so, like, I don't know. Anyways, I'll just add my rant right there.
I do think it's important not to take anything for granted also. You know, like I'm somewhere in between what both of y'all are saying, and you know, I think it's like when you to ignore certain paranoid little thoughts and then to see them confirmed, you know, it's all fun and games until Adam Waffen members show up at your house and, you know, like it's, so I think, you know, I don't know, but like, I put myself out there, so it comes with the territory. And I was like talking to Frank, I was like, well, I'm not some hardcore anti-fascist, like, they're not going to dox me. And he's like, no one gives a dude, like, you're an anarchist, like, you're part of this, they don't care, like, when they show up to your house with baseball bats, they're not gonna give a f*** about the fact that you've never doxed anyone. And then, like, I was like, huh. And then, like, two months later, I show up on, like, some pseudo-academic report of linked, and, you know, online extremists, and, you know, Tim Pool's, all, you know, all these people are, like, talking about it, and I was like, okay, yeah, well, that ship has sailed. Like,
that's it for From Embers tonight. If you want to hear an even longer version of that panel, including some of the Q&A, this is a joint broadcast with the Soulcast. And I think if you check out the Soulcast edition of this same recording, you can hear a couple of the questions that got asked, including a pretty interesting conversation about the differences between FM radio and podcasts and prisoners' access to both those formats. Thanks for listening. I'm still here, the burden of the game. I care no more. At my feet, nothing but a boring order. That feels like chaos. You say I'm living the dream, but it feels like a seance. All of my life at this shit, it owes me nothing. I owe it less. I flow like a real intelligence into consciousness. Every year, tear a page in this bleeding ass book. Poet, you were far too cavalier about death. Now you know it well. It's in your breath. All of them I won't carry with me. I mean I will, but I can't, it's too heavy. All of us Roman circus sacrifices in a civil war. I am still here, watching reality tear an uglier one appear. When will we say, you can either have my time or my life. Pictures of my children and my wife. I work for no one, not even history. No philosopher ever saw us coming, sitting in place when we should be tearing it down. I wish you well, when you rise up I'll be on the barricades with you, shit. I'll host the meeting, and I'll even plan the attack. But you gotta have my back, not just show up. Most of us don't like each other. They taught us money's all we have to offer. And in this world we're so fucking broke. Even when we're rich, they say this life's a beach. But even sand is running out, fancy that. The premise of my last album was wrong. But when I said that, I was watching a city that I love dearly die. All I could do was get together with friends and complain. Till all we did was complain. All my time is too precious to wring my hands and mourn. When I say I wanna be free, it's not a threat, and I'm not kidding. To me, anarchy is a word that means don't wait, take, build and destroy what you must. Don't bash your head in a concrete forest, so we're headed for a real one, covered in ticks and rashes and poisonous moths, cutting down acres of golden rod and brush. We are a world unto ourselves, all of us, worlds unto ourselves, connected. We will stay eating in an anti-Eden, but needing more than a politics of negation. Let's build into the rulers of the world. I don't want your shit, so fuck off and rot like you've been doing. Your president is the sum of all your politicians, and your politicians are the sum of nothing. And nothing from nothing don't mean a motherfucking thing. So my advice to y'all, stay away from parasites. I mean, destitute their world or stay precarious in theirs. No time to despair. My enemy trust, enemy wounds, enemy sister, enemy man, right there. No time to despair.